Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and this is an audio program where we discuss your favorite and not-so-favorite science fiction TV shows and films.
And this is your co-host, Carl. Now, normally we just review episodes, but today, on a very special episode of Sci-Fi Party Line, we are interviewing actor Michael O'Neill, who plays Alan Sparks on CBS's new sci-fi show, Extant. Here's our interview.
I went to space on a 13-month solo mission. I didn't come home alone. My husband created a lifelike android called a humanity. His name is Ethan. He's the prototype. This is a story about Earth.
Ethan!
A story about family. A story about surviving.
Welcome, guys. This is Kat and Carl from the Sci-Fi Party Line. We have a special guest today, Michael O'Neill. Now, if you've seen him in films, he's been on Seabiscuit, Transformers, and recently Dallas Buyers Club. But if you watch shows and talk about him and love him like we do, he has a long list of sci-fi shows and related shows. And we got The Cape, and that's the 1996 one, Millennium, X-Files, Roswell, 24, Carnival, West Wing, The Unit, Criminal Minds, Flash Forward, Numbers, Fringe, and finally, Extant. And we're going to talk to him today about Extant and maybe some other things, if Carl is curious.
I'm very curious. I've got many questions.
My first question is, now, Michael, you're known for playing, like, law enforcement, military, but I've noticed something else. You play characters with kind of various shades of gray, not quite evil, not quite good. I want to trust these characters, but turns out you're like a drug kingpin or a murderer. And it makes me feel sorry for your character, but it's like a delicate balance from, like, normal to insane, and it is actually kind of responsible for the big reveals or the change in story's direction. Do you seek these roles, or do people seek you out to perform this kind of delicate operation?
You know, more and more, because as a young actor, I sort of established that authority figure, and they would, you know, when I did the West Wing, when I was the head of the Secret Service, and, you know, I was a guy with a mustache who would solve a problem. And then along the way, they decided that I was a guy with a mustache who would create a problem. So there's been a little bit of back and forth on that in terms of Extant. I did not realize I was the villain until about the 7th or the 8th episode, and I was watching. I went, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm the villain here. How can that be? But, you know, it's funny. When you're doing something, Kat, you never think of yourself just a bad guy.
Yeah.
You always think of a person who is driven by something that all of us, I find as an actor, that all of us have a point at which we would do whatever we had to do to protect what we had to protect. Most of us think, goodness, never have to challenge that in life because it's instinctual. And so what I find is with these characters that walk sort of a fine line, that I always want to make sure there's a humanity in them so that you recognize the character as someone that you may have known, and always that it costs the character something to do what he has to do. He may have the mettle to do it. That does not necessarily mean that he wants to.
Yeah.
And it just gives me something to play, and it costs me something to play it.
Well, let me just interject real quick. I know this is the Sci-Fi Party Line, and Kat did an excellent job of running down your sci-fi credentials, but I happen to watch Grey's Anatomy, and let me tell you, Gary Clark is one of the most memorable guest stars that has popped up on that, characters that popped up on that show. Once again, you draw us in with your everyman relatability, the pain, and then you go too far, sir. And see, we're very concerned about this trend of your character development here. But,
yeah, what is that? It's funny because I think that you're right, Carl. Grey's did something. That role changed directions for me a lot. And it was, I think Shonda Rhimes reached out to me about that. And I think the reason that she did it was because I'd been a character actor that you sort of relied on to do the right thing. And she saw something. What happens if you turn that coin over? And the character does the absolute most desperate thing that he can do. So that was an important milestone for me along the way. I don't doubt that Extant, I know it came off of Dallas Buyers Club to some degree, mm-hmm. And Transformers, because I'd worked with Mr. Spielberg there. But I do think Gray's probably had an influence on that, because of the fact that there was a humanity. He was dead, terribly broken and desperate and untethered. And pick it out on an entire hospital.
Well, you can say some very similar things about Mr. Alan Sparks. So
it was almost like a Twilight Zone episode. Almost.
Yeah.
So we can tie it back to that if we want to.
is this your first time as a? Are you a series regular? And is this your first time as one?
You know, Kat, I am a series regular, and I am, and it is my first time. I have created so many recurring characters on shows over the years, many of which were treated like regulars, but, you know, always had a closed-in engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So this, for me, is... I had lunch with my agent yesterday, and we were talking about something. I don't know how it came up, but we were talking about death briefly.
Yeah.
And I said, well, now that I've been a series regular, at least I fulfill that great wish of mine. That, you know, that off my bucket list, I can I can go in peace as having done that once. And my wife turned to me and said, "Not yet, sonny boy, not yet."
Oh, that's so cool.
But what a show to be a series regular on, to work with Halle, to work with Halle Berry and Cameron Vanheim and Gordon Busnick. And, oh, my gracious sakes. I mean, they just, you know, I would wait another 30 years. I hope I don't have to work with a cast that good.
They were not playing with the casting on Extant, because a lot of times when shows offer up science fiction, sometimes they really focus on the effect and the concept and everything, but sometimes the who they cast slips a little bit, and we're just supposed to be dazzled just by the special effect. Out of the gate, you guys have an incredible set. Just everybody on there has done great work in the past, and they add to a lovely, lovely tapestry on the set.
He's in love with you.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. It starts with Halle. It really does. I've said this before, but I have rarely, if ever, worked around a more gracious, generous actress than she is. She works really hard, and she doesn't complain, and there's no star turn. It's all about, let's do this and make it as good as we can possibly make it. And what happens to you as an actor is that it raises the level of your game. You want to bring your best work. And I like that. I like being inspired by someone like that.
That's pretty cool.
Well, you can definitely feel some interest.
And she's really easy to look at. I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to say she's beautiful, but there are times when I would get lost in a scene. I'm like,
really bad.
Is it my turn? Am I supposed to say something here?
We at the Sci-Fi Party Line hadn't noticed. We hadn't noticed that about Halle Berry. We just respect her purely from her directing and acting.
We can laugh about it because she would too.
She's lovely. But okay, so one of the things you were talking about earlier is, you know, the ability for stars of the show to sort of contribute to the direction of the show, or, you know, moments in the episode. Are the episodes shot in order, or, you know,
yeah.
They are shot in order? Okay.
You know, CBS, to their credit, and I really tip my cap to them. They wanted to do something that was a true serial, so you know, our show plays out like chapters in a book,
mm-hmm.
and one domino falls into the next domino, but it's not your typical, there's a crime, you solve the crime in the hour, and then you feel a sense of completion in that in a short period of time. This is, you go on a journey. we're going into a different world. We tried to make sure that the land that we went to, our sci-fi land, our 50 or 60 years into the future, resembled, had enough of a resemblance to the world that we all know now to be recognizable. Mm-hmm. And yet there were elements that clearly had changed. They had evolved. There were mechanisms. There were computerizations. There were, you know, and I thought those were incredibly well done. But at the same time, what they wanted to make sure of, and I credit Mr. Spielberg with this, he wanted to make sure that the show was emotionally available. Mm-hmm. It was emotionally available, and you recognize those family dilemmas. You recognize people struggling with ambition as opposed to family, or how do you juggle those two things, or what does it cost you when you're trying to come back and reintegrate into your family? I thought that those elements were very, very, very important to, quote-unquote, the humanity of the show. And I feel that they, you know, they honored that aspect of it, even as we moved, as I say, into a different land.
Okay. It's pretty cool.
You can definitely feel that Extended is a different kind of show. I mean, you can call it sci-fi because of the overarching themes, but episode by episode, like one episode will feel like an absolute, like a family drama. And then the next episode will feel like some kind of like a lost love triangle. And then you get a murder mystery. And then one's a straight up horror. And it's not necessarily a gentle transition. They very much focus episode by episode on these different parts of the storytelling. And, you know, for some viewers out there, it's taking them a little bit out of their comfort zone in terms of what they expect of, you know, a sci-fi show or a drama. But I don't know, what can you tell the listeners about, you know, how to appreciate what makes Extant unique? I mean, you see what I mean about how that's a little unique.
I do see, and I do think it is challenging. It's very, very challenging for an audience, and we tried to be very respectful about that, Carl. We wanted to make a show that people had to engage. They had to lean forward. They had to make decisions for themselves about what did that mean, where was that going. And in doing that, we said, you know what, let's not insult them. They can follow anything we can throw at them. But we threw a lot. And in the beginning, there were threads. It was almost as if we had laid, you know, taken a card table and laid out different decks of cards and said, okay, we can turn this deck over, or we can turn this deck over, and we can turn this deck over. And then little by little, those cards and those decks began to shuffle together. There were threads that began to weave until at the point where we are now, you're beginning to see the, you know, the payoff of all those things. But we asked a lot. We did. We put a lot out there in preparation in a very cautious, sort of methodical way, and then it sped up. And I think about episode four, we took off. We just said, okay, we've set the table, here we go. And, you know, I've had a couple of people that I've talked to, friends of mine, and they're like, wow, what did that mean? And I said, what are you thinking, man? And they come up with the most fascinating answers about things. And I thought, boy, I wish I had had you around when I was shooting that, because it's a whole other side of it that I didn't explore, that I think is worth exploring. So I hope that we've succeeded in engaging the audience in a way. They have to participate. We're asking them to participate. We're asking them to go, where do you think it's going? What did that mean? And they happen, you know, I mean, one storyline will weave, and then we'll jump to another storyline. Little by little, they're all coming back together. But I agree, there's some jumps, and people have to go, okay, this is a leap of faith for us, but we'll stay with
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm. So on the latest episode I watched this morning, you're in custody. Your people know that you shot a man. Your daughter is alive. Spoilers, people, if you're not caught up. So, like, I'm kind of scared for the character because, like, what's next? You're already caught. Your daughter's coming back. I mean,
well,
I don't want you to give us spoilers, but it's a scary place to be.
You know what, Kat, it is. And I'm not sure what they'll decide to do. I've painted myself right into a jail cell. And, you know, how does one get out of that? We'll say this. Sparks figured out how the alien does what he does first.
Oh.
He was the first one to go, okay, I see what it's doing. and I go to the chamber with it, you know, where we're keeping it, and I say to it, show her to me. And it shows me my daughter, but it shows her, it trumps me. It goes one higher than what I anticipated. It shows me my daughter is an 8-year-old. And that, I mean, it stole my breath away when that child appeared.
Yeah.
And I love that. I mean, I love the journey that they've taken me on. And granted, you know, it's hard to get out of cuffs. I hope I never have to be in them. I hope I never have to be in them again. I said, well, these feel too familiar. And they said, well, then stop doing what you're doing. I said, well, I'm trying to ask the writer's room to stop it. But I think it'll be fascinating. They've given me a couple of clues of how they move forward with Sparks, but they're only clues for me. You know, at this point, I'm through the rabbit hole, and I'm just going to have to wait and find out what they decide to do with me.
Oh, man, it's exciting. So I want to ask a little bonus question. I watched you on Bates Motel, and you were a drug kingpin, and that was kind of different. I mean, because right out the gate, you were just a bad guy. Was that fun, or how was that for you?
It was different, and it was a lot of fun. You know, it was extraordinary to get to work with Vera.
Mm-hmm.
Young Freddie, they were wonderful people to play off of. Vera's so alive. I mean, you can see the actress. I had done a film with her years ago, and I made a note to myself. I said, I really hope I get to work with this actress again.
Yeah.
So when they called and inquired about going to work on Bates Motel, I said, absolutely. But the thing that I liked about Richard Ford was that he was well versed in the underworld. He had come up as a drug dealer as a very, very, very young man. But his Achilles heel was that he always wanted to be a legitimate businessman. He really wanted to be accepted into that society. He had his fingers in everything. And so it made him interesting to play, because underneath, I always knew that he would do whatever he had to do.
Yeah.
But he wanted to be able to do it in a certain way.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, when he had to reach for the brass knuckles, he would reach for them. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I misgauged her, Kat. I really underestimated her, which a guy like Ford didn't do very often in his life. But he was a little bit charmed, there's a small flirtation
yeah,
that happened there.
It was really nice.
And it absolutely skewed Ford's perception. I underestimated her from that moment on. Or not that I was underestimating her. I got distracted by how beautiful she was.
Yeah.
And so it left a dangerous element. I was blinded a little bit to how dangerous that actress was. And it was fascinating to me, you know, to get to work with her. But I'm glad you saw it. I'm glad you cracked that one. It was
that was
really
a good
day.
You died brutally. You died well.
Well, you know what the moral to that story is. If you pull a .45, use the .45. Don't show it to him. Just shoot him. You know, I think Ford didn't want to have to clean up his rug. Cost him, didn't it?
Yeah, pretty big. Okay, so some actors get stuck only on TV or only on film. How are you transitioning? You're like going between worlds, and you're both places. That's really awesome.
You know, Kat, it's a bit of an extraordinary time for actors in this regard. There are a lot of really interesting projects on TV that used to be films. They've gone to the long form. I dare say it's probably one of the things that rallied to this was that it was not bound by an hour and a half. You could explore a lot of different things, and the writers could take you on a journey that was more satisfying. So I'm really lucky to be able to go back and forth between the two. You know, did a little show last year called Rectify on the Sundance Channel.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very, very different kind of writing. It's almost, who's that wonderful Southern writer? She was just dark as she could be. I can't think if she's down from Savannah, and I'm blanking on her name right now. But it has that quality with it. you know, everything looks beautiful, but underneath there's this decay.
Oh.
And so, I mean, television is in kind of a golden age right now. I really think it is. So it's nice to be able to go back and forth. I don't know that a film like To Kill a Mockingbird would be made for the movie theater right now. It might be made for in television.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Interesting, yeah.
So, yeah, so I'm grateful to get to move back and forth between the two. You know, Dallas Buyers Club was a straight drama. I mean, that was a small little film that I in a way, we shot that in 25 days.
Wow.
And, without a grip package, by the way. It was existing light only.
Wow.
So we were racing. You would leave your trailer in the morning and you would run from one location to the next. You had to outrun the light because at the end of the day, when the sun went down, we were done. And it was a labor of love. These two producers had kept this thing alive for about three generations of directors and actors and just refused to let it die. And when Matthew came on and began to lose weight, and people began to go, oh, wait a minute, we've really got to invest in this now. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the result was extraordinary. But it's not easy to get straight drama back in the theater. It tends to be a greater, the larger tinted action adventure films seem to dominate that arena right now.
Yeah.
So that leaves a lot of room in television for us to explore the other things.
Well, I mean, we talked about the high quality of actors that they chose for Extant. You've got Steven Spielberg backing you up. There's a whole sort of a cinematic feel to the structure of Extant. How do you think it differs from a film? I mean, we are talking about this time of transition. Is there something about the fact that it's on TV that is an added bonus for if this had been a movie instead? Or how do you feel that extra amount of attention and effort they've put into the television series would compare to trying to make this a movie?
Well, it's a great question, Carl, because they wanted to maintain a filmic look for Extant. They wanted a depth of field that was richer. They wanted colors and palettes and textures that were more like film than we normally have time to establish in television. I mean, we're doing 1 hour in 8 days. A film does 1 hour in 2 months. So what happened was that we had a lot of very, very, very bright people work really hard to make that look. And once it was established, then they had to work hard to protect that look. And I think they did a marvelous job of that. And you know, I have to say, that's Spielberg and that's Halle Berry. You've got a preeminent film actress, you know, an Academy Award winning, incredibly talented actress that comes in. Again, people want to bring their best game. And I saw that with the crew, and I saw it with the writer's room, and I saw it with the other actors. So that's how I think it happened. I think there was an intent to do that call. They really wanted, to stretch the color and the depth of it and make sure that we made it look as much like film as we could.
Well, as fans
and,
of sci-fi, oh yeah, well, as
I'm
fans,
sorry, no, go ahead.
Yeah, as fans of sci-fi, Kat and I often joke about TV series. They start with this great special effects, really big opening, everything. You can tell they put all the money in the first episode, and then there's no evidence of the scale of that in all of the intermediate episodes. And for you guys to keep up the consistent modern look of the future throughout each episode, the pilot, don't get me wrong, that was pretty impressive. I mean, between the space and the special effects and everything, but each episode since then, even when you're hanging out on Earth, there's always some reminder that this is a future. There's some little accent to an effect that really reminds us that, hey, this is a different world, and we're experiencing something a little bit more modern. So it's good to see that.
I'm glad you point that out. I really felt like that was a concerted effort, you know, on set decoration's part. And I go back to Mr. Spielberg on that. Again, he wanted to make sure he was not specific about how far in the future we were. He wouldn't give us a date, per se. And so what he was trying to make sure is, is you and I can look back on 1980 or 1970 or 1960 or whatever and recognize things from our households that are still in play today. He wanted to make sure that an audience from 2014 would see things that were familiar, but at the same time, make sure that there was a logical evolution of where technology would go, when those screens would, you know, when you would go down and the screens would give you information, the way things are recycled, the way garbage is compacted, the way, you know, the way communications work, how far out into space we've been willing to reach. I think you're right. I think each time we tried to continue to plant seeds and make sure we cultivated those things along the way.
Well, it certainly holds up. Each episode has a very rich feel to it, and that's very well done. But okay, so how about you got any behind the scenes set silliness? I mean, tell us about a fun day on the set of Extent.
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun for me to just go to work, just to be around those people. Carl, it's a great question. I'm trying to think if there's a particular incident. Hallie's a bit of a joker, you know. She's also very generous. So there was a thing on the set that one day when, you know, we would do the rehearsal and the director would go, "Oh my gosh," and Hallie would go, "I know, you should have shot it." So it became sort of a running theme. So about a week later, she shows up on set with all these great T-shirts that say "Extant" across the front, and off the backside of them it says, "You should have shot it." So, you know, she kept things playful. She just kept, you know, she just kept us sort of moving forward. And even though, you know, Sparks is doing some pretty dark things, but, you know, I would come around a corner to shoot her, and she'd be in some goofy, you know, she's just a bit of a, she's a lot of fun. So, and for me to chase her, you know, I chase her all over the, you know, the thing where I find her, I think I've already gotten killed. And then I have to chase her all over everywhere. And she runs like a gazelle, you know, and I run like a guy who'd only run if you were shooting at him. So she would just laugh at me, you know. She would just have fun with it. So there really was a sense of camaraderie on the set. And at the time, we were moving with great purpose. So I don't have a particularly funny, you know, gag reel thing to share with you, only to say that there was great camaraderie, great affection happening inside that company. And no, not too many people are that funny around Sparks, because he'll kill them, you know. I mean, I don't know what to say about him.
It's for a good reason.
we try to hang with you as a sympathetic character, because clearly we can feel the pain of the lost daughter. We're with you. But when you took the shotgun to the old lady in the park, we had to part ways at that part. And that's right. I was like, okay now.
Come on.
You're going.
That was an accident. That was totally an accident. I liked her. I really liked her a lot. It's funny because I asked the director, I said, "Listen, after she goes down, can I just say, oh, Esther?" It wasn't in the script. I said, "Oh, Esther." I didn't want to kill her. It's just one of those things where the gun got between us and it went off. But you're right. As soon as I did that, what about when I got chronographed? I went, I've reached the point of no return now.
Yeah.
I thought, how did Sparks get to be such a good shot? And they said, well, you know, he grew up hunting.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's it. So, what's next on your role wish list? Like, where do you want to go next? I know you want to have like 8 more seasons of Extant, but if that doesn't happen, like, where do you want to go next?
Well, it wouldn't be bad to do something funny, would it?
No, yeah.
You know, Galaxy Quest is one of my favorite films, you know, it just, Battlestar Galactica is one of my favorite series, and Galaxy Quest is one of my favorite films. And I thought, wow, it'd be fun to be involved in something like that, you know.
Oh, man.
You know, I'm like, I want to be the guy, I want to play the, you know, the country doctor who has a young wife.
<I'm scared. laughs>
He gets the girl, and, you know, from time to time, the alien visits him. And I think I'd be in good shape for the rest of my career.
You know, as flexible as Extant is, you may be able to work that in.
Yeah.
You might be.
Oh, that would be excellent. Carl, any last questions before we let Mr. O'Neill back to his evening?
Well, I got a couple, just little questions.
Okay.
First of all, thanks for sharing your sci-fi history. I mean, in terms of what you like. Battlestar Galactica, was it new series or old series?
The Battlestar Galactica.
Right. Which one?
Because the new one.
The new one.
Yeah. I actually had a friend who did the original, who did the old one when I was a young actor in Los Angeles. I had a friend that was on that show, and I liked it. I really liked it a lot. I tell you what got me into the genre, Carl, was The Day the Earth Stood Still. Michael Rennie and Patricia Neal and Sam Jaffe. And Gore, is that how you say the name of the
Gort?
I just, you know, because at that age in my life, I wanted so badly for there to be contact, and I wanted it to be benevolent. I wanted it to want to help us, you know, and for us to overcome. Wait, we don't have to do that. You know, it's one of the things. Robert Wise was a brilliant director anyway, but I think that was the one that I went, oh. And I was of the age when Star Trek came along. You know, your parents would go out on Friday night, so we'd stay home and watch Star Trek.
Yeah.
I felt like that was really made for my generation. And I remember watching, I saw Leonard Nimoy speak when I was in college. He came to the university where I was in school, and he spoke, and somebody asked in the crowd, but they said, "What's the biggest difference between you and Spock?" And he just held really still, like he was pondering the question. And then he reached up and pulled on his ear. And it broke up about 6,000 people. You know, I mean, it was just I'm sure he's probably, you know, done it hundreds of times. But it was the most delicious response to it. And I thought, yeah, that guy's smart. So that's my, you know, but The Day the Earth Stood Still, I can go and watch the film, you know, 100 times and be suspended by it.
That is a great choice. Great choice. Now, also with fans of sci-fi, we frequent DragonCon down in Atlanta. We actually just got back a couple of weeks ago. We missed you guys. We were looking for Extant at DragonCon. So next year, somebody, you, Hallie, bring the crew. You've got to show up because we'd love to meet you in person.
I think that would be great. I really do. You know, we jumped in. We jumped in February, and we jumped in hard and fast. And there was no time for us to do any of the conventions or the conferences. So hopefully, you know, we have a little wind in ourselves, and we can do that because that would be a lot of fun. You know, sci-fi fans are extraordinary. I mean, they're very, very few. I mean, they're true fans of something. You know, they're invested in it, and I think it'd be great to be, you know, in a situation like that.
Yeah. Well, now
as long as nobody ray gun me.
No, yeah.
If they ray gun me, I'm not doing it.
Well, see, now I'm sporting a bald head, so I could show up with the fractal rash on the back. You see, that's the real fans. When they dress up.
Oh, man. Yes. Bring that. Oh, that would do it. I'm telling you. But everybody around you would be a little jumpy, don't you think?
True.
Yeah.
It's Atlanta. It's the CDC's down there. We're a little worried about that.
Who is Carl going to turn on? Because he's having that fractal rash. I know he's going to turn on somebody.
Oh, my God. It'll probably be.
Shall we end on fractal rash? I think that's good. We'll be
okay. Yeah. I was waiting for them to come and paint that rash on me, but they never did.
No, yeah, maybe. You never know.
I could say, you know what? That's right.
You never know.
That may be our reveal.
Oh, goodness. Well, we thank you so much for joining us. It was a lot of fun, and we will let you know when we post the show so you can hear our antics.
I had a really good time with you guys. I appreciate it.
We look forward to seeing you in this and many more things in the future.
Thank you, Carl. Kat, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Y'all take care.
And we end with Fractal Rash. Yes, we get Hollywood's best on our podcast. We line everything up. We get it, and that's how we end things. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, that was such a fun interview. Oh, my goodness, Carl, our first baby.
It's a space baby. It's our space baby.
That was an excellent interview. I thought Michael O'Neill was very gracious in answering our silly questions and just, you know, reaching out to us.
Thank you for the time. We do appreciate that. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah, I really enjoy the way, like, he sort of didn't give us a lot of the behind the scenes, but, like...
You know, he couldn't, because I was listening for spoilers. We were trying to tease a little something out of him, but he was not giving it up.
But I like how he says, like, what he was thinking about when he was running after Halle Berry in the, like, boiler room, and just how things are going on, like, with the t-shirt thing that she did, and how she's kind of a goofball, and how, you know, it's just fun to hear how they make the sausage, if you will, and I don't know, I really enjoyed that.
Behind the scenes is always exciting. That was really cool. So mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. So I think what right now, next week or this following week or whenever you listen to it, this is going to be the season finale.
We haven't seen it yet. We're waiting for it anxiously. So,
And a lot of things has led up to it. I think we were kind of spot on when we said that Michael's character, Alan Sparks, was just like this Shades of Grey character. I kept wanting to root for him. Like, oh, he's going to turn out of it. He's not really evil, but he kind of just... went all out evil, and you still kind of feel sorry for him because of his daughter coming back.
You do. He's going to wake up and his wife is going to be gone, and he's going to that's a good point. We don't know for sure, but let's just say he's done some things. And when he wakes up from the spell that the alien baby put on him, even though he has his daughter back, I have a feeling there's going to be some emotional repercussions. As he said, what? There's always a price to pay.
But that might not be his daughter, because, you know, in the last few scenes of the latest episode that we saw a body.
Yeah.
And she kind of like locked Sean in like the airlock room, and he might be launched into space or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of rough, because what it appears, I mean, we're looking at what's going on in the episode, it appears that we've got two sets of aliens, or like the boss and the junior aliens.
Yeah.
So his daughter is now possessed by...
No, because there was a body, so maybe she's really dead,
Okay, right, so when I say possessed, you know, it's hard to... What's the language for this show? You know,
maybe she's a shapeshifter? Like, let's go X-Files description. Shapeshifters versus, like, black oil aliens.
And then again, we don't even know if she is corporeal. That could all just be in the imagination of that other guy.
She appeared on film... That was pointed out that Molly's revealed on film,
true,
so they assumed that she was real. But now this is something different.
True. Well, see, he could have just told us. He could have just told us in the interview, and this would have been settled. And now we still have more questions, and we'll call him back. We'll call him back.
Michael, hey, just a quick question.
Remember that part when the ghost alien daddy was talking to the look? That's the, okay. Here's the other thing about when you talk about Ixnot. One of the craziest things is trying to explain to other people what you have seen. Because you will find yourself in a conversation like, okay, that scene, right? When the android's dad, walks into the room and he's talking to the ghost-possessed, like, Halle Berry mama, but it's not really him. And then the android walks in on him and he's talking to nobody. And then the rash shows up. No one in the vicinity of you is going to know what the heck you were talking about. They're like, oh, are you crazy?
That sounds like when we tried to explain Lost, X-Files. I mean, it's par for the course.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. That's good sci-fi. You got to be in it to get it.
But I just really, really enjoyed that, Carl. That's like our first real interview.
It was awesome. It was-
So I think what we're going to do, perhaps, Carl, is wrap this one up, and we're going to have a separate episode where we talk about in detail the latest 5 or 6 episodes.
Yep, we'll give you a recap on Ixnot, let you know what we think.
Okay, so is that our show?
That's it. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
And by the way, if you have other friends on the show that you'd like to set up interviews. If you have other friends on the show that you would like to set up an interview with us, Halle Berry. Anybody on the show, Halle Berry. If you'd like to, send them on our way. I gave your manager my personal phone number, so if Halle Berry wants to call any hour of the time, she can reach me directly at any time. I'd be happy to.
Oh my God! Do not call him.
This is networking. I'm Hollywood networking is what I'm doing here.
Okay, Carl. Yes. Whatever. You're sleeping on the couch. And that's our show. We'd love your feedback. Give us a call at 773-336-2686. Go to our website and leave us a comment on scifipartyline.com. And you can also leave us a comment on iTunes.
You can find us online on Twitter and Gmail. I'm Global Minister. Kat is Fancy Fembot. You can catch us both at Sci-Fi Party Line on Facebook, Google Plus, and Stitcher Radio.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this particular special show.
Yeah.
And we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hello?
Okay, Kat, you there?
Yes, I am.
Now, you called me on Skype to the cell phone. You're prepared to record now.
Yes.
All right, but Emerge calls now. He's recording on the other line. Let's see if this goes.
Okay.
All right, Michael, are you there?
I'm with you, Carl.
Kat,
hi.
Are you there?
Hi, yes, I am.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
It's working.
It had a little cold or something. It's over it now.
That's what, the convergence of technology necessary to make this. We got New York, D.C., and you're L.A., right? Out in L.A.?
Yes.
And our various computers are synced up now. So, yes, finally, we got this.
Liz.
I like to say the alien got it.
Yes, you got it.
The alien, baby? I don't know. Okay.
Well, how are you two? Where are you? New York? Somebody's in New York. Carl, is that you in New York?
No, okay. Kat is in Ithaca, New York.
Okay, you're in Ithaca. Okay.
And Michael, I'm in Washington, D.C.
You're in D.C. All right. And I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's nice.
So we triangulated this.
Yes, we did. In a perfect way.
We've almost created an isosceles triangle.
Yeah, and let's not forget all of the associated artificial intelligence that are helping us with this right now. We got computers listening in the background. It's crazy.
Okay.
When we were doing the show, I said, come on, let me talk to Ben. Come on. Because Ben is the central computer on the Sarah. Let me talk to Ben. And they're like, no, Michael, I'm sorry. You don't get to go into space, and you're not going to talk to the computer. I said, just one episode. Just let me talk to Ben. They wouldn't go for it. I don't know.
Ben is pretty cool.
You got to keep begging, cool. I hear. You got to keep be persistent.
Well, there was. I have to say, because Pierce went to the writer's room and said, I think that my character should ride a bicycle. And they said, well, we don't have that in the Bible. That's not in the script. And he said, yeah, it's very important. I feel. And they said, well, then you got to make a presentation. So he went away. And he drew up a modernistic bike and came into the writer's room and made his presentation on why he thought it was important for his character to ride the bike. And, of course, they built a very specific storyline, and he convinced them.
Wow.
And they built this wonderful storyline, where those two kids take it away from him, and they push him down in the mud. And when he comes up, he's got this tear across the skin of his face, and we see the circuitry underneath. And I'm like, oh, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So I have to say, you're right. You just keep begging, just keep hammering them.
Yeah, that was a power.
And maybe they'll get it.
Well, okay. Let me tell you. Now, we asked for 15 minutes of your time because we're trying to be respectful of your schedule. But our show is actually a longer format. So I will simply say this. We've got a couple of questions we want to ask you, and we will follow you. From that point on, if you want to hang with us, you want to keep rolling, that's fine. Or if you have to go, that's fine. But
that sounds good, Carl. I'm Southern, so your danger will be getting me to stop talking.
Well, only there were some Southern folks on the phone here.
Yeah, I'm from Houston, Texas.
Well, in the old days, they considered D.C. the South.
Thank you. They still do know. See, while I was born in D.C., I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. So, you see, we got some Southern folks ready. This may not end, I'm afraid.
We're all good.
Okay.
End of line.